Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 2nd, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's nice to have you with us. On today's show, we'll get an update on the library with Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch. Carl Broderson will detail the upcoming Blessing of the Fleet. Carl Yucatel and Janice Holst will discuss the upcoming Adopt a Sailor Day. Joe Carson will talk about his new book, 19 Unicorns, and First Friday book signing at Rainy Retreat Books. We'll talk about the Douglas Island Neighborhood Association meeting with guest Robert Sewell. And we'll get a preview of naturalist Richard Carstensen's presentation on how Juneau has changed in the last 150 years. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juneau Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. British Columbia's government has taken the next step in a long-running legal dispute with the tribe in Washington State. Correspondent Emily Schwing explains.
The case dates back to 2009. That's when Washington resident and defendant Rick Desitel knowingly hunted elk illegally in British Columbia. In March, the provincial court there ruled that members of the Sinaixt tribe, like Desitel, could still hunt on traditional grounds in Canada. The tribe and their attorney, Mark Underhill, expected the Canadian government's appeal.
We came into this case knowing that, well, at least I can speak for myself, I'd have a bit more gray hair by the time it was done.
In the original case, the government argued that when members of the Sinaixt tribe moved onto the reservation of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville in Washington State, they gave up sovereign rights in Canada. The government maintains that argument in their appeal. Underhill expects it to be heard in Nelson, British Columbia, this fall. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
Quebec communities have appeared in court in a bid to prevent a land transfer from the provincial government to territory of a Mohawk First Nation. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the cities filed their lawsuit 4 years ago.
That lawsuit was launched after the province of Quebec signed a deal to return 500 acres of land that had been appropriated in 2006 for highway construction. The mayors of four South Shore cities, Châteauguay, Saint-Constant, Saint-Catharine, and Saint-Isidore, say they were not consulted about the deal and are trying to block it. While the lawsuit targets the Quebec government, the Mohawk community of Ganawage is speaking out. Here's Chief Joseph Norton.
They don't stand a chance in winning, you know. It's as simple as it is. And once that happens, then we're going to go to work and we're going to have to do what we have to do on the land that rightfully belongs to us.
Norton says it's just another exercise to prevent his indigenous community from gaining any type of economic development. He describes it as an attack on Ganawage. Norton also says it's another case of First Nations acting in good faith while others have not. The mayor of Châteauguay says she's still open to meeting with the First Nation and the Quebec government to try to reach a negotiated settlement. She says she understands that Ganawage has been wronged, but two wrongs don't make a right. During the 18th century, Britain ceded 40,000 acres of land to the Mohawks to create Ganawage. Only 13,000 remain. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization is waiting for a decision on its land into trust application, as KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
For decades, the federal government had prevented Alaska Native tribes from putting their lands into trust. But a court decision last year overturned the so-called Alaska exemption, opening up new opportunities for tribal sovereignty that mirrors Indian country in the lower 48. The Juneau-based Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska is nearly at the end of this process. Its application calls for putting seven downtown parcels into a federal trust. The land includes what was once a summer village inhabited by the Ok Tlingit.
We have really no plans to really get into any kind of big ventures there or anything.
That's Richard Peterson, the Central Council's president. He said putting land into trust would be a milestone and make the tribe eligible for more federal grants. So far, only one other Alaska tribe has completed the process, and the issue remains controversial.
When land goes into trust under these circumstances, it removes regulatory authority over the parcels.
That's Juneau City Attorney Amy Mead. Tribal sovereignty can affect anything from local zoning to police and fire coverage.
And those issues need to be worked out before the city can take a position.
But Peterson says the tribe plans to work all that out with the city. A ruling by the Bureau of Indian Affairs is expected within the week. I'm Jacob Resnick.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by BNSF Railway Company's STEM scholarships for business, mathematics, natural and physical sciences, technology, engineering, education, medicine, or health administration. Info available at aises.org/scholarships. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, on this 49-degree and overcast afternoon here in the capital city. And in the studio now is Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch of the Juneau Public Libraries, and they're going to let us know what's going on at our local libraries. Hi, Beth. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Scott.
Hello. Thank you.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well, it's May all of a sudden. How'd that happen? We don't know. But we have some fun things happening in May. But May is kind of special in the sense that the youth services team, we take a little break from doing our story times and our toddler times, and we go on a tour of all of the schools.
Take it on the road.
We take it on the road, right. And so,
do you have like an RV that says Juneau Public Libraries and Beth and Andy?
Yeah, we wish.
Okay, sorry.
We have some really great props that we haul around in our own vehicles, and we take to the schools, and we do skits for the elementary schools on from popular books that they love, like Piggy and Gerald. And then we do some book talks at the middle schools and the high schools, and we tell them all about what's going to happen for summer reading program, which will start at the end of the month on like May 27th. So, like, basically school gets out, and the next day you can be involved in summer reading.
Very cool.
Summer reading is super fun. It's a national theme that everyone shares, and this year it's Build a Better World. And so we're going to have tons of programs all summer for people of all ages, kids, teens, and adults. So you should check in with us, and we can let you know what's going on.
Great way to spend those summer hours.
Yeah, and a couple other places that we go on as far as the tour. So we go to visit all the schools. We also go to a couple of these fun events in our community, including the Maritime Festival this Saturday. And this week is actually Children's Book Week. So we get all these really great, I guess just swag from like the people at the Center for the Book and Every Child a Reader and these great national organizations that promote reading. And so we'll have all kinds of fun tote bags and posters and some fun little like activities, like a search over throughout town for finding things and winning prizes. And so there'll be lots of cool things you can do at our Maritime Festival table, as well as learn more about some of the things going on for the summer reading program.
You mentioned a book title I didn't recognize, and it made me sort of wonder, what is hot in children's books these days? Mm-hmm. What are some of the more popular titles?
Well, I think the one thing you can always count on that children love is Mo Willems, and there's these two characters, Piggy and Gerald, and they're just they have great conversations about a variety of things. And he actually wrote his last Piggy and Gerald book, I believe, last year. And it was called The Thank You Book. And basically, Piggy and Gerald go through and thank all the other little characters that show up in their book. And so this year, you can come to our table at the Maritime Festival or at Community Day on campus on May 20th and do a thank-o-rama. You can spin the thank-o-rama spinner, and then you can go out and thank people. So, for example, there's the pigeon. That's one of the characters that always shows up. And he's trying to work at the hot dog cart maybe, or get a hot dog from the hot dog vendor. So one of the people you can thank is the hot dog vendor. And since we don't have a hot dog vendor, I always say the meat on a stick people. You can go and thank them today because they're out there serving really good meat on a stick.
You've probably read this whole series of books, right?
Oh, yes.
What would you attribute to its success?
I think it's just a really witty, like, repertoire, like the way they interact with each other, right? Like Gerald is this very kind of logical and you know, straightforward elephant, and Piggy is this joyful, little best friend character that like is always prodding Gerald to try things. Like, for example, one of the skits we're doing is called I'm a Frog, and Piggy comes in going, ribbit, 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 right? And Gerald's like, what are you doing? And Piggy's like, I'm a frog. And you know, Gerald's like, I thought you were a pig. You learn something new every day. And he's like, no, I'm pretending. And he's like, what's pretending, you know? And so you learn all about, like, how to use your imagination through this little story. And you know, Gerald's very, 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 very resistant to doing any of this. But in the end, he kind of, like, lets loose, and he becomes a cow.
What about the classics, Cat in the Hat, Where the Wild Things Are? People still interested in those?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely, yes. We are having an author come, and we'll talk more about this in June, but Lynn Ray Perkins is coming, and she's also a children's author and has a lot of really great books that kids are loving right now. But one of the things at the library we have as far as the literature that kids are interested in is voting on the Children and Teen Choice Awards. So you can come in and check out some of the winners. For example, Kate Beaton, who was just here for the comic convention, her book for children called King Baby is up for as a finalist for these awards. So there's some really great books in this collection that you can vote on.
Okay. Andy, you were telling me something about some outreach at the Senior Center?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one of the things that we do is we bring a pop-up library to the Senior Center every other Tuesday. And this is at lunchtime, so Tuesday, May 9th is the next one. So if you are a senior and you want to go, you can eat free lunch at the Senior Center and also access the library. We bring everything. We bring books, print and large print. We bring books on tape and CD. We bring movies and documentaries. We bring magazines, all sorts of things. And you can check stuff out from us, return your books to us. You can ask questions. We do technology help. So if you're, say, how do I do this on my phone? Like, I can help you do that on your phone. it's just a really great opportunity. If you are a person who has trouble making it to the library, this might be an opportunity for you to be able to use library services to get books and movies and magazines and interact with people and also have lunch. So it's kind of win-win-win. There's a lot of winning.
So noonish on every other Tuesday.
Yes, okay. Noonish every other Tuesday. And so Tuesday, May 9th is our next one.
And that's the Senior Center by Harborview Elementary?
Yes.
Okay. Harris Harbor mm-hmm. is there. Okay. Lots of great stuff, as usual, going on at the libraries. Where can people get more info?
You can visit our website at juno.org/library or check us out on our Facebook page, which is Library Events.
All right. Beth Weigel, Andy Hirsch, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add?
We'll look forward to seeing you at the Maritime Festival and at the Community Day on campus, and you can learn all about fun things happening this summer.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Pausing from this robust song, the winter wren hops onto a log deep in a moist conifer forest. It pokes its beak into the decaying wood and plucks out a piece of mint-green moss. Then it disappears into a dense huckleberry bush. The winter wren is adding a mossy roof to its cozy nest. Meanwhile, high on a tree with a broken top near the water, an osprey is adding material to its nest. Branches 3 feet long, plus smaller sticks, bark, mats of algae, they make up his 4-foot nest. Look closely, and you might see a neon yellow rope woven carefully into the structure, or maybe shiny plastic fluttering in the breeze. In a mature eastern woodland, an ovenbird weaves the nest that gave it its name. The nest looks like a tiny domed oven right on the ground. Whether for natural materials or flotsam and jetsam, birds are out searching. You can help. Collect threads and dog hair combings or purchase prepackaged materials. Yes, there are such things. To hang where birds are present. Then watch to see who accepts your offering. It might just be this tiny songster, the winter wren. Find out more about how you can help improve the world for birds. Come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Are you ready to launch or grow a Southeast Alaska food business? The Paths to Prosperity is seeking innovative food businesses and startups for the 2017 competition. The deadline to apply is May 31st. Join Spruce Root on Tuesday, May 9th at 5:30 p.m. for a free informational webinar. Visit sprucerute.org for application information and the community outreach calendar. This message is brought to you by Spruce Root Community Development and the Nature Conservancy.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, May 2nd. It's about 15 minutes past the top of the hour. In the studio now is Carl Broderson. He's the board president of the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial here in Juneau. We're going to be talking about the Blessing of the Fleet on Saturday. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Blessing of the Fleet. How do you think this came to be?
There's a tradition of having memorial walls and blessing the fleets before they go out fishing every year, and I'm sure parts of that go back beyond time immemorial. But in Juneau, about 30 years ago, a group of people got together and, you know, decided and realized that we don't have a memorial and had one built. And it was a long, long effort, but here we are today. It's the 27th annual, and we get to go bless the fleet and remember the people who went down to the sea in ships and never came back.
Yeah. Do you happen to know how many names are on that wall?
There are 212, and after the next engraving round this year, we'll have 218.
Wow.
And I should clarify, not everyone, you know, died tragically on the wall. Some of the people who lived long lives, but their names are there because they dedicated those lives to fishing. It's a real mix.
And how did you come to be on the board? I know you sort of, you wear many hats in this community. How did this one attract you?
I have names on the wall.
Okay, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen on Saturday.
On Saturday, for rain or shine, hopefully the latter, folks will get together down at the memorial, and we will give a brief introduction. Lieutenant Governor Malott will give a short speech for us, and then we will bless all the boats that are gathered out front there one at a time. That's Father Gordon Blue of Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. And then we will read all the names on the wall, and then we will have brunch.
Okay, and it starts at what time?
10 o'clock.
Okay, and where will you have brunch?
Brunch is right behind. It's at Risha Wilson's Twisted Fish. She very generously donates food to us every single year, and we appreciate that immensely. It's very much a community event.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I think it's sort of obvious, but, you know, who should come to this?
Anyone who's interested in fishing, anyone who's related to those 218 people, or anyone who just wants to honor folks that go to an awful lot of effort to put food on our plates.
Okay. If people want more information, Carl, where should they go?
You can Google us at Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial. It's akcfmemorial.org, I think, something very much like that, but Google can get you there.
Okay. Otherwise, we should see you Saturday morning, 10 a.m., and describe again, just in case people don't know where the location is.
Certainly. It's right next to the Twisted Fish and Taku Smokeries, right on the water there.
10 a.m. on Saturday.
Thank you much.
Anything else you want to add, Carl?
It's a great event. If you can make it, come on down.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Support comes from Juneau Airport Shuttle, beginning May 15th, providing regularly scheduled service to and from the airport and 3 downtown locations. All flights, every day. For more information and online booking, JuneauAirportShuttle.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 2nd, 22 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. And in the studio now is Carl Uchitel. He is the CBJ Port Director. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Thank you, Scott.
And also Janice Holst, a cheerleader, self-proclaimed, and organizer of the upcoming Adopt a Sailor Day when the USS O'Kane comes into port. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay. Carl, when does the ship get in?
So the USS O'Kane, which is a 500-foot destroyer that's homeported in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, will be arriving on Saturday, May 13th, and departing May 18th. So they'll be here for a few days, but they're going to spend the entire time at anchor.
Okay. And you said about 330 individuals on board?
That is correct.
Okay, and we are looking for community members here in Juneau that will meet up with these folks and help them get a feel for Juneau. Is that right, Janice?
That is right. I know we did it 9 years ago, 2008, when the SS Juneau came, and within a day or 24 hours after announcing it, we had everybody out, probably 425 different families that just showed up at Centennial Hall and took 1, 2, or 5, or 10 sailors and made a day of it, and what was great. They loved it, and the people are still talking about it.
And what's the idea? Like maybe take them to the glacier, go out to Eagle Beach, have a barbecue? What are some things you heard?
All those things, plus just sometimes they just want to sit at someone's house and play with their kids, because a lot of them are married and they just miss their families, and some are single, but, you know, not all of them want to be in a bar at 24 hours a day, you know, so some of them would like to come up for a breather and have a good time. So, I mean, we have all kind of things. We have, the town is offering all kinds of discounts and that sort of thing. But people don't have to be worried about anything fancy. You can pack some peanut butter sandwiches and go on a hike or something, you know, or cook a hot dog or two. Or if you're busy all day, you just plan some kind of barbecue in your backyard. They would love it. You know?
And again, this is not this Saturday, but next Saturday, the 13th, right? And Carl, you say you do have some interest already, about 80 emails in already, but you could use some more. How can people do that?
Yeah, correct. So on the city website, juneau.org, on the Hot Topics, there's a button for Adopt a Sailor. So it's very simple, just name and phone number and how many sailors you'd like to adopt and any activities that you might want to do. And it's really what we're going to do is just kind of share this information with the ship and let the ship contact the individuals. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity for Juneauites to show the welcoming side of us and thank a sailor for what they do every other day of the year.
Okay. On that day, it arrives on Saturday, right?
Correct.
That 13th. It sounds like there's going to meet up at Centennial Hall. You want to tell us about that?
Well, actually, I want to just clear one thing up that I thought of. Is it only Saturday and Sunday that we have them, or we have them for extra days?
Well, actually, the way it's going to work is we will just make those contacts. So we're not a matchmaker, but we're connecting sailors with local volunteers. And so whatever the locals want to do, if they're working Saturday, Sunday, they could offer to show them around Tuesday, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's,
yes,
you know, it's very it's very unprescripted, I'll say.
Okay, flexible. Just
yes,
making that connection. Okay, so maybe people would come in and meet them downtown on that day, but maybe it would be on Monday.
Well, they have
something
to keep listening to K2, and they'll find out exactly where we're going to meet, right?
I like it, Janice.
What big eyes you have, Carl. Oh, well, you know me. I just think it's going to be fun. And you have to think of what the guys and gals are doing on that ship. You know, they're protecting us. They're out to do good, and they're far away from home and family. So, I mean, I just know there's millions of hearts out in Juneau.
Well, it means so much, too, when you're traveling somewhere and you actually have a local connection
exactly,
to where you are.
Exactly. So, everybody, you can come for two. You can adopt a sailor every day. I mean, wouldn't that be fun? I mean, I think it's going to be a great event, and all the people, trail mix, and everybody, cruises, everybody's getting ready to line up some activities. So if you don't quite have an activity, you can find out what's happening and maybe help out on that.
Okay. Carl, will you remind us of where people can go to sign up?
Absolutely. www.juneau.org, Hot Topics. So that's the city website, Hot Topics, Adopt a Sailor. Or send an email to adoptasailor@juneau.org.
Okay.
Or call Janice.
Yeah, Janice, you want to give your phone number?
Sure, 723-1462.
Okay. Anything either of you would like to add? Are we missing anything?
Oh, you won't be sorry that you did it, and you'll have a good time, and it'll show off Juneau at its best if you're involved.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show, Carl and Janice. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Jazz and Classics, kicking off Friday, May 5th with the Congress, a dynamic mix of R&B, classic country, rock and roll, and old school soul, known for a jazzy sound, as versatile as unpredictable. Dance with the Congress, May 5th at 7:30 at A&B's Bratrovich Hall, or catch them on the two blues cruises Saturday night, sailing from Auk Bay at 5 and 9. Tickets are at Hearthside, The Jack, and JunoJazzandClassics.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 2nd. We're right at the bottom of the hour, and in the studio now is writer Joe Carson to talk about his new book, 19 Unicorns. Joe, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi, Scott. How you doing?
All right. So 19 Unicorns.
Yes.
17 short stories. Is that right?
17 short stories and two novellas, two short novels. I suppose this could have been three slim volumes, but I decided to give people their money's worth this time on this book. Giving people their money's worth, I guess that maybe goes against the tenets of capitalism, but that's why I'll never be rich.
How many books have you written, Joe?
Well, this is basically the third. And the last one was also a collection of that was just short stories. This one is, like I say, 17 short stories, some of them very short, and two short novels, two novellas, one of which just happens to take place right here in Juneau, of all places. My novella, let me get it right, Ixt, I-X-T, which is a Tlingit word for a shaman, or I think some people have translated that into English as a prophet. But anyway, it's a spiritual leader in the Tlingit community. And the story, which takes place in Juneau, has a Tlingit myth that kind of runs through the whole story. It's an adventure story, and I think people that live here in Juneau will recognize a lot of things. And it takes place a couple decades ago in Juneau. It's in a slightly different Juneau and a very fictionalized Juneau. I changed a lot of things around. I'll just warn fact checkers about that right now. I kind of changed a few things around just to fit my story. But you'll recognize it, and it's got a lot of flavor of Southeast in it. As a matter of fact, I think there's salmon right in the first paragraph, and I think the last paragraph of the novel. But it is an adventure story, a wild one. So it's sort of, I don't know, sex, violence, and salmon.
Sex, violence, and salmon.
That would be a good. I was kind of thinking in terms of a screenplay when I wrote it. So that would be a pretty good. That'd be good copy for a movie poster. Sex, violence, and salmon. That's what else do you need?
I was going to ask you sort of how would you characterize yourself as a writer or your writing? And that feels like a good jumping off point right
there.
Yeah,
well, I write mostly short fiction, and which is a bit of a challenge. Novelists very often talk about how they just throw some characters out there and see what happens, but when you're writing short fiction, it's a little bit more controlled than that, I think. And I tell people that my stories are, to me, they're more like discoveries than inventions because they come to me with the beginning, a middle, and an end. I get the whole thing. And very often I'm writing, I get the end first, and I'm just sort of writing towards that. And which is a good example of that would be one of my short stories, which is called The Quiet Man, which I'm going to put this out, dangle this in front of people. This ends with, I think, one of the most with unique murders that it's one I've never heard of. A couple of my stories end with murders, but this one, it's just an image I had of this rather horrible murder. And the whole story is pretty much a contrivance getting to that because the ending came to me first. And anyway, I'm going to let that dangle out there for you murder connoisseurs, but this, I know that sounds kind of dark, but there's lots of humor in my stories too. But that one does have kind of a dark ending, and but it's an example of writing towards that end. It could have been a different setting for the story, but I thought it was a very powerful image, and I kind of wrote the story to get to that image, which is like I said, I'm going to let that dangle out there.
All right. So I know you also work in town as a musician. I know
yes.
You do some blogging that tend to be sort of often political.
Yes.
What does this fiction writing do for you? Why do you do it?
Right. Well, yeah, again, I do the blog is hopefully fact, as factual as I can make it. And I do try to separate my fact from fiction. I guess I'm just a natural storyteller. That's how I became when I was very young, I liked to read and I liked stories. And I just, for some reason, I've just always had a propensity for turning things into stories. And very often that's a good way of kind of looking back at your memories by giving them a kind of a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that book that I wrote, the novella that I wrote about Juno, this is an example of sometimes the way I write. I wasn't in Juneau when I wrote it. I was actually living in Fairbanks, and I think I wrote most of the story while I was during a winter I spent in Homer. So I wanted to write the book not about observing Juneau, but by my memories of it, and I call this the squint effect. If you've ever seen an artist, a graphic artist, sketching or painting a landscape, sometimes they'll squint their eyes. And what they're doing is they're obscuring the details. They're just trying to get the big picture, kind of the lights and darks. And what I do sometimes writing is I just mentally squint. And that's what I did with writing this book about Juneau. I just wanted it to be about my memory of Juneau, which I had lived in before I moved to the interior. And so I obscured a lot of the details. And but you'll recognize Juneau for sure in that. And that's the one novel. The other short novel takes place very far from Juneau. It takes place in the Midwest, in back in Ohio, where I was born and raised, and where I fled from at an early age. It's a very different story. It's also an adventure story, but it's basically a romp through the 70s. As told by a bohemian without a cause living there during the 70s, he's a counterculture person, but not really in the new counterculture. He's more of an old kind of a beatnik who's, I'll read from the blurb on the back of the book here. It's called Pulp 73. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll. George substitutes booze and jazz into the counterculture battle cry, but he's just fine with the sex part as he battles through the 70s in his Bible Belt, Ohio home. It's about a struggling young writer. Can't imagine who I based that upon. But.
Tell us about Friday. What's going to be going on at Rainy Retreat?
Yeah, well, I will be there with several copies of my new book, and I'll be signing copies there. And, it's going to be fun. I know I have a habit of turning my literary events into circuses, but my last one turned into a bluegrass festival. But that's I'm going to try to keep this one a little bit down to earth. But you never know. There might be some surprises. I'm sure there will be. But I'm going to try to take advantage of that kind of nice, cozy, old-style bookstore, independent bookstore that we have at the Rainy Retreat there, and kind of keep it down and do a literary event. And I'll be happy, I'm looking forward to talking to people about my writing and my books and anything else they want to talk about. So I think it'll be a lot of fun.
That's this Friday, starting at 4:30 at Rainy Retreat Books, as part of the First Friday Art Walk.
Exactly.
Joe Carson with 19 Unicorns. Sounds interesting. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, thank you. Just thanks for having me here, and I'm looking forward to seeing the people Friday at Rainy Retreat Books.
Hey, in case they can't make it to Rainy Retreat, where else can they find the book? Or
it should be any place where books are sold.
All right.
Better be.
19 Unicorns, Joe Carson with a K. Thanks for your time, Joe.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scott.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, about 17 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Robert Sewell, and he is going to tell us about the Douglas Island Neighbors Association meeting tonight. Welcome to the show, Robert.
I'm delighted to be here, and we're goofing around with the microphone a minute. Yes, Douglas Island Neighbors Association. It's a community group that has been running for about a year and a half or a little more. We meet monthly these days. It's the first Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock at the Douglas Library. Increasingly, it's well attended, and the whole deal is spirit of community, trying to meet your neighbors to think about the road ahead, be more proactive rather than reactive, which brings us to this month's theme, which is public safety. That's on a lot of people's minds, and we hope to be a continuing part of that conversation. As frequent readers of the media will know, we've been involved with that topic lately, but that is kind of accelerated many people's views, so we thought this would be timely, and we'll sit down with the police tonight at 6 o'clock.
How long have you lived in Douglas?
Oh, I've been in Douglas since about 1998, which makes me before the first flood.
Have you seen things change over there?
Yes, and in some ways, delightfully for the better. The new generation has come, kind of the baton has passed, the torch has passed. So there's lots of families with young kids, but we still have a very, very strong, maybe even stronger sense of community. We have an annual large picnic, kind of a block party thing, for everyone, for free, and we've tried to stoke the feelings of belonging. But as an underpinning, as many people know, there are problems that are afoot in Juneau in general, maybe nationally. Some of those relate, as is known, to drugs, to narcotics, this kind of stuff. And it's got people edgy. So we are trying to think more about how to prevent and how to be proactive regarding crime. There has been an uptick here and throughout the borough. So,
I've had Lieutenant Campbell and Chief Johnson on the show, and one of the common denominators of their advice to our listeners has been, talking to your neighbors, talking to your, forming neighbors associations and such. So this sounds right on the right track.
Yeah, beautiful.
6 p.m. tonight, theme is public safety. All Douglasites, can Junoites come as well?
Yes, please. This is a general topic. I mean, the answer is yes. I think burglaries have went up over the last 3 years, respectively, 89 to 160 to something like 370. So it's a borough-wide concern. Do drop in, but particularly for those who live on the island, because we need to be thinking ahead about what to do about watching out for each other.
6 p.m. tonight at the Douglas Library. Robert Sewell, thanks for coming on the show.
Delighted you could stick us in.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 2nd, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is naturalist Richard Karstensen, an author. He's going to be talking about his presentation about Juno over the last 150 years. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Hi, Scott.
And also Jane Lindsay, the director of the Juno Douglas City Museum. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Hello.
And Mike Blackwell, he is on the board of the directors of the Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
All right. So this Thursday from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Jack, right?
Correct.
Juno Arts and Culture Center here in the Willoughby Arts District. Richard, what are you going to be talking about?
This is actually on request from Jane and Mike. It was their idea to come up with a banner that gives us some idea what parts of Juno looked like 150 years ago, the time of the Alaska Purchase.
You just showed me a picture, and you created that image. Is that right?
Yeah, in Photoshop, which I compare it to what this California ecologist Laura Cunningham does with paints, and it actually takes her way less time than it did for me to do it in Photoshop, because I just acre by acre with a rubber stamp tool, transferring trees and avalanche chutes. And
it's, if I know you, it's not so much artistic, although it looks very good. It's very data-driven and from your research and experiences outside.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay. And, Mike, how was this inspired for you, this presentation?
Well, Jane came to the board of the Friends of the Museum looking for a project to take note of the 150th of the 150 years since the transfer of control from Russia to the United States, and we came up with an idea then and now, nature, and so we went to one of Juno's most accomplished naturalists.
Okay. And how about for you, Jane?
As many of you know, 2017 marks the 150th anniversary of the transfer of Russian interests to the United States. And we are the capital, so I actually had a meeting with the Lieutenant Governor's office, and they said, you know, so what are you guys doing? And I thought, well, there's no history really that we can speak to of the Russians settling here. In fact, if you look back to 1867, there was probably less than 300 non-natives in the state of Alaska, and what they estimate maybe 30 to 40,000 indigenous folks. So I thought, what would the land have looked like, and could we possibly work from that angle and celebrate Occoquan, and of course the Takuquan as well, but we only had so much area that we could work with. And that's when I went to Mike and the Friends and said, how could we do this in a short amount of time, which is actually quite amazing if you think about what Richard has done in this short amount of time, because our museum is Juno Douglas history, and we hadn't really thought or proposed any significant projects for the 150th. We're very lucky to have him here in Juno.
Richard, I know you've been studying the nature of Southeast Alaska for a long time. As you put this presentation together, did anything surprise you, and or what are you most excited to share with the public on Thursday night?
I guess it's not only the changes in nature, but the cultural changes. I felt like to do a good job, I had to go back and do a lot more research on the distribution of settlements and fish camps. It probably is the case that, at least for the downtown view, we're going to have three views, one of downtown, one of the valley, and one out at Auk Rec. And for the downtown view, it's quite possible that no European had ever even laid eyes on what we now call the Juno, the capital city. So I learned a lot more probably about cultural history than I did about natural history going into this.
Well, I wish we had more time, you three. This sounds really interesting. You can see this for free Thursday from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Jack. And remind me the title of your presentation.
1867 to 2017, 150 years of change in
Occoquan.
the land of the Occoquan.
Richard Karstensen, Jane Lindsay, Mike Blackwell, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, May 2nd. A couple minutes here left on the show, and we're here to talk about Whistle Down the Wind. I have Michelle Amore from Juno Douglas High School, and also Aaron Dillon and Lydia Cass, members of Whistle Down the Wind. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Whistle Down the Wind. Tell us about it, Michelle.
So it's an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, and it's a really fun family musical. It takes place in the 1950s, and what happens is there's an escaped convict at the beginning of the musical on this really small farm town, and they're all scared and worried, and he's hiding in one particular barn, and when the kids come across him, he looks like Jesus, so they think he is Jesus. And so then it ensues, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's a really fun thing. The convict lets them think he's Jesus, so they'll hide him and not tell on him. And so it's just a fun little musical, and it has a big heart to it. And we are partnering with Alaska Youth Choir. We have a big children's choir as a part of this musical, and that's really exciting. Thunder Mountain High School is actually playing the pit for us, which is really exciting to partner with them. And then the most exciting news is one of my alumni, who was exceptional back in high school, who went and got his master's at Boston Conservatory, has come back to play the main lead, who is the convict who pretends to be Jesus, Aaron Badilla.
I was going to say, with the beard and the long hair.
Good, yeah, yeah. Look, I look a little bit like Jesus. Okay, good.
What's been the most fulfilling part of this for you, Aaron?
Well, it's been really great coming back to, you know, the old school and being able to work with Michelle again and seeing kind of the present generation that's there and even the future generation in the Alaska Youth Choir that's coming up has just been really exciting for Juno Theater for me.
Okay, Dillon, how about you?
I don't know. I think it's been cool to have a real leader. I know me and Lydia are both interested in pursuing acting as a career, and so it's really cool to meet someone who actually is a professional actor. So I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
How about you, Lydia?
Yeah, this show is very different from other things we've done because, like Ms. Moore said, we're teaming with AYC and we have an alumni coming back. So it's very cool. We have the present, we have the past, and the future.
We just have a few seconds left. Michelle, can you give us the details on the dates?
So it's next weekend, Thursday, Friday, and two on Saturday. And you can buy tickets at Hearthside Books or thejack.org.
Thank you all for coming on a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to a Juno Afternoon.